Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again for our radio audience tuning in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM. We're glad you all could tune in as well, as well as those tuning in online around the world. Thanks to our friends at blogtalkradio.com and in Atlanta at 106liveradio.com. Dr. Ron Cooper is making his first appearance on our program today. He's the author of the book, The Gospel of the Twin. But we're going to be talking to him about something that was released this year that has definitely gotten people talking. It's the rating of the presidential candidates on the question, how would Jesus vote? We're going to talk to Dr. Cooper not only about this journey of sharing this information, but also what it was like for him to be able to see the response to it as well. If there's no hearing about him, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can stay connected with him and find out more information about his book. Dr. Cooper, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Cyrus. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. As I said, we're going to be talking about the grading of the candidates a little bit later. I want to first talk about this journey for you, because you were able to, you know, have this fascinating life where you're able to not only to do something that you love, and that is to share what you have learned, but also, of course, to be able to really, I think, you know, to educate and inspire people along the way. I mean, what has it been like for you to not only be a part of a conversation about religion and faith, but also to see the response?
Well, you know, Cyrus, for over 20 years, I've been intensely interested in ancient Jewish history and early Christian history, and especially about the historical Jesus. For some time during the 20th century, there was very little work done on that, but in the latter part of the 20th century, a number of wonderful scholars began to try to peel away all the layers of you might say, myth from Jesus the man, to try to figure out who he was and what kind of world he occupied. And I have found that extraordinarily fascinating. My suspicion is, and I think I've got quite a bit of evidence here, is that many people who are Christians don't really know very much about Jesus's historical situation. They don't really understand what it was like to live as a first century Jewish peasant under Roman occupation. I think once we know more about the life that he lived, then we can understand a bit more about what he was trying to accomplish. So I think that sometimes the historical work done by these wonderful biblical scholars is a little bit technical for an ordinary reader. It's kind of hard to get through, and you're much too academic, much too boring to just to be open. But one way to try to get people a little more interested is to maybe write a novel about these things. So my novel, The Gospel of the Twin, is largely about what was it like during Jesus's day? What was he, as best we can figure out from all the things said about him, trying to do? I've been doing this research for many years, and I just finally decided I should write a novel about it. But then I started thinking, what sorts of things could people learn maybe from Jesus's approach to things, and apply it a bit maybe to their political approach? Now, I want to make sure the listeners understand that I'm not trying to tell people how to vote here. I have some ideas about what Jesus was like and what he was particularly interested in, and it's just something I think should be thrown into the mix, especially when we hear people say, I want Christian values in the White House, and then they disagree a great deal about what those Christian values are. But there are certain things that I think that were particularly important to Jesus, and so I thought of them as criteria for how we judge or how we can look at our candidates and see how close they come to meeting those criteria.
Right, and we're going to talk about those for sure. And just to give our audience an opportunity, for those who have not heard about this, there are four areas that you address: human rights, poverty, equality, and, of course, love. You know, which definitely is something that, that Jesus taught a great deal about. You know, initially this conversation, I should say, initially, Dr. Cooper, this conversation was only going to be aired on our online side of our program. When I initially booked it, I was not sure how our radio audience would take to the conversation. But in talking to some of my listeners and being able to throw it out there, you know, now we're simulcasting it through our friends in Mississippi at WYAD. And I bring that up only for this reason. As you know, there are, of course, we all have heard, there are two things you do not discuss, you know, with friends and family, and that's politics and religion. You bringing both of them together, of course, you know, in this conversation. I mean, what has that been like for you to see? How did you, because you, like myself, of course, you know, being from the South, I mean, how did you get over the thought of how people would receive it, as well as, of course, you know, the conversations that may come from it?
Well, you're right, Cyrus. That's quite a risk when you make views like this public to everybody. But, you know, you probably will agree that even though people say you don't talk about politics or religion, people do it all the time. You know, everybody's
right.
interested to some degree in politics, some more than others. Everybody's interested in religion, some more than others. And Americans, probably more than many other countries around the world, particularly in the Western world, Americans are intensely interested in what their political candidates believe. You know, what are their religions? Do they agree with me on certain views that I have that I base on my religious views? And if you find out that a candidate disagrees with you on a certain religious view, that might be that one issue might decide whether you want to vote for that candidate or not. So there's a great deal of this discussion going on anyway. Now, now of course, I knew as I was writing up this little investigation or this analysis that I did that it would upset some people. Some people look only at the results and think that I must have had a kind of bias. But I want to assure folks that to me, I was in a sense just kind of plugging in a formula and seeing what the results
right.
are. So
right.
once you start out with these criteria of equality, concern for poverty, human rights, and love, and then look at candidates and see how well they stack up, I think it's far more objective than many people might think. We're much too quick in this country to disagree with someone and not think that that person had some good reasons for coming up with that view. It's much too easy simply to say, oh, well, you simply are liberal or you're simply a conservative, and you're, of course, going to say that. And I wish that we could get beyond those discussions in this country.
Right. And you bring up an interesting point that I wanted to share, Dr. Cooper, you know, in the analysis, and that is that, and this is actually what you wrote, I should emphasize that these grades are not meant as measures of the candidate's religious faith. And I think I bring that up because you're right. We, you know, it is, and I think the other interesting thing that I first thought about when I heard about you doing this is that I think we all have, even those who say that we are Christians, we have our own idea of what that looks like. And so my view of Christianity may be different than your view of Christianity and the next person's view of Christianity based on our own, for one thing, our own thought process and our own biases, quite frankly. And, you know, here you have a perfect example of, you know, the candidates that you were able, you know, to reference in this study, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton in particular, and then Bernie Sanders, who, you know, whose score I think will surprise a lot of people in some ways. These individuals who all say, you know, that they are individuals of faith. But, of course, we know that they have different views of that. Has that been part of the fun for you in this, if that's the right word, Dr. Cooper, to see how people's idea of what it means to be Christian lines up with what the candidates agree?
Well, you know, Cyrus, I've taught comparative religions for over two decades now, and one of the things that I found out quite early on was that most of my students are unwilling to understand that a religion like Christianity, which is the largest religion in the world, has so many different groups within it. And even if you pick any one particular Christian group, pick Catholics, pick Presbyterians, pick Eastern Orthodox, there's a wide variety of ways that someone can be a Methodist or to be a Baptist. But that doesn't stop people from saying, I know what a real Christian thinks, or I know what a real Christian believes. There's a huge variety there. I can't claim to know what our candidates really believe in their hearts, and that was the last thing that I tried to weigh in here. All I did was say that, these seem to be the things that were especially important to Jesus, and let's see how our candidates' statements and the ones who have been in say Congress and what their actions have been and how well they might measure up to that.
Right. I think that is the interesting thing. We're going to talk about the idea of voting here and Jesus more, Dr. Cooper. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking today with Dr. Ron Cooper. We're talking with him not only about his great study, How Would Jesus Vote? We're about to get more into that scale, but also he's the author of the book that I mentioned earlier, The Gospel of the Twin. We'll tell you a little bit later how you can get that for yourself. You know, one of the things that comes across, though, you know, as people study Jesus, and Dr. Cooper, you know, definitely you are one, as someone who has definitely studied the life of Jesus, would be able to comment on this, is that it would seem as though Jesus was not interested in politics, that he was not interested in being a leader per se. It seems as though, you know, from Scripture, that he was one of these individuals who they tried when they wanted to make him a leader. He ran from that. I mean, how have you been able to show people that the way that he lived seemed to be, you know, as a person who felt as though just as a human being, as an individual, you could do as much good?
That's an excellent question, Cyrus. First of all, let me mention here that in this analysis that I gave about how Jesus might vote, I wanted to remove from the discussion any views of Jesus's divinity, any views that one might have about the supernatural, about Jesus's miracles.
Sure.
Christians, there's plenty of room for Christians to disagree on how those things weigh in, and just more about the kinds of things that he said and what
right.
we can tell from historical research would have made sense in his day. These are the things that that I think that many modern-day Christians aren't aware of. In Jesus' time, particularly where he was from, he was from the Galilee region where there was a rampant, horrible poverty. An ordinary Jewish peasant paid about 50% of his income to taxes, and worse than that, I mean, and that was bad enough, of course, but worse than that was that it was under Roman occupation, which I think many readers of the Scriptures don't quite understand. The Romans had been, when Jesus was an adult, the Romans had been in charge of that region for over a century. And they could get away with just about anything. They could, if you were a young man, they could just come into your village and grab you up and conscript you into service. You could be sold into slavery. Just about anything could happen. So this was a horrible time in the history of Jewish life. And there were a number of ways that that ordinary Jews tried to deal with this. Some of them joined resistance movements. And in the first century, when Jesus was doing his ministry, there were quite a number of small, never any large ones, small groups of bandits who ran around attacking Roman legions, not always to very good effect. And they also attacked the Jewish leadership, because most ordinary Jews saw the Jewish temple leadership as being collaborators with the Roman occupation. The other thing you could do is you could just decide to go into hiding and go into the desert, go into the caves, and ignore all these things. Jesus, I think what was so socially interesting about Jesus and probably unique. You know, I don't think there was another Jewish leader who did something like this. Was to say that there we have to find a way to retain our heritage, to retain our dignity despite the Roman occupation, despite being treated more or less like slaves, and get through all of this without the use of violence, without turning tail and running, and still have some kind of spiritual element to this. And for Jesus, this was largely an internal view you had to take. You had to kind of reevaluate what your life was all about. And when Jesus talks about the kingdom of God, I think, well, I'm not the only one who thinks this. There are plenty of biblical scholars who think. When he was saying kingdom of God, the idea was we are going to ignore the empire of the Romans and focus on our own empire, one that is more internal and one that is more about compassion and connection and culture, and not one that is about conquest and oppression. So when you think about those kinds of things, you know, when you understand what he was facing and what and the way that he was trying to respond to this horrible time in Jewish history, I think you can probably better understand why those four criteria that I mentioned, concern for poverty and rights and equality and underlying it all, love, was so important to him.
Right. And speaking of that, let's go back then to the study, because when you talk about love, it's interesting looking again at the candidates and being able to think about their views of other individuals, how that seems to line up, I guess. It surprises me. You wrote this. Jesus was about love with no room for hate. And I think that is one of the things that when people think about politics today, I mean, it seems to be more about what we're against than what we're for. I mean, what was it like for you to look at just that factor, look at love, and think about, you know, some of the things the candidates say, some of the things that they, you know, of course, or, you know, or being able to out on the campaign stump say that they want to be able to do what they believe in. What was it like for you to just compare just that factor, Dr. Cooper, when it comes to the scale?
Wow, that's a good one, because Jesus actually imposes a really tall order on us. So if every religion says love is a good thing, nobody disagrees with that. But if you say I'm a Christian and I know Jesus said love your neighbor, you might not remember that he went a couple of steps farther than that. He said not just love your neighbor, but love your neighbor as yourself. And that's
right.
A lot to ask. And if you remember in the scriptures, in the Gospels, when he says that, he immediately has some listeners who, and you can understand why they do this, they immediately said, so who's my neighbor? Hold on a minute. That's a lot to ask. Love them as myself. And that's when he tells a story about the Good Samaritan. And again, this is a historical issue that I think that many modern-day scripture readers might not be aware of. The Jews and the Samaritans lived next door to each other, but they kind of despised each other for about three centuries by the time Jesus came along. They disagreed about a whole bunch of things. But Jesus tells a story about the Good Samaritan, one of his most vivid and wonderful parables, in which the Samaritan, who's supposed to be their enemy, is the good guy. And you
right.
have a Jewish priest, and you have a member of the Levite family, kind of the temple leadership family, who should know better. They should know the right thing to do, and they don't do it. So when Jesus says that kind of thing, that's telling people that the message is, and he doesn't say it directly in this parable, but he says elsewhere, the message is love your enemy. And that's a whole lot to ask. And very rarely do we ever hear a political candidate say that, well, we have some enemies. I believe they are trying to take over our country or kill us or whatever, but our response should be love. Now, when's the last time you heard that one? That's something that political candidates don't like to say. They get people riled up, more or less degree, depending on whom they are. You get people riled up when you say, let's go search them out, let's kill them. So, for instance, in the analysis I did, just for one of the examples, Jesus never said, let's build a wall to make sure we keep the Samaritans out of our region, unlike Donald Trump wants to build a wall to keep every Mexican out, apparently. Jesus never said, let's root out all the non-Jews and kick them out of our region, unlike a couple of candidates who said, let's find Muslims and send them back home. It seems to me that if you want to claim that you are influenced by Jesus' teaching, that you have to take everybody at who they are, no matter how different they are from you, and not only accept them, but really love them. And that's what I think Jesus really required. I mean, I think he actually imagined you could have an entire country, an entire culture, whose basic principle is not just leaving people to do as they wish, not just recognizing their own freedom and dignity. Those are important things too, but going farther than that and saying we are based on actually loving each other. That's something I don't know that any world culture has ever quite accomplished.
And I think that's the interesting thing, Dr. Cooper, when it comes to this. You mentioned, of course, Donald Trump. You know, he, when it comes to love, scored the worst. There was a tie, I guess, for who scored the best, and that would be, you know, Clinton and Sanders. But even with that, you know, the two of them had their own differences on other things. And where Sanders came out ahead. What has fascinated you the most about the response so far?
I don't know that I should have been. I don't know that I should say I'm fascinated by it, and I probably should have expected it, because with these four candidates, Trump, Cruz, Clinton, and Sanders, and now we pretty much have two viable candidates. But I wrote this analysis up when we still had these four were the front runners. Clinton and Sanders score highest, and Cruz and Trump score much lower, quite a bit lower. Trump gets an F in every category, and I probably should have expected that people would simply say that I was doing that only because I had preconceived notions and I was anti-Trump and I was really pushing for the Democrats, which really wasn't it at all. But that's how people do, and it is part of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, in which we have far too much discussion in which there's no real dialogue in this country when it comes to politics. People have their minds made up, and they think that other people just are wrong in whatever they say. People have their minds made up on what Christianity is all about, and most Christians get much madder at other Christians than they do at people of other religions, because they want to say this is the only way you can be a Christian, and when someone challenges that, then they get very defensive.
Yeah.
So some people have responded in rather vile ways to this.
Yeah.
But I was prepared for it.
Yeah, I can believe it, and it definitely goes to what we were just discussing about love, how, you know, how sometimes what we say we are does not always align up with the way that we act and the things that we say and the way that we treat one another, for sure. But it's a fascinating conversation, Dr. Cooper, and I'm so glad that we could share not only with our online audience but our radio audience here in the South as well. Again, everyone, Dr. Ron Cooper has been our guest. He's the author of a book that's available for you all to be able to get by Bancroft Press. It's called The Gospel of the Twin. And, Dr. Cooper, how can our audience stay connected with you?
They can go to my website, which is www.roncooper.org. That's the best way to get a hold of me, and they can order the book through that, or they can order it from bancroftpress.com or any online bookstore.
Well, Dr. Cooper, thank you again so much for the time. Really appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back. Love to have you back on the program again.
I'd love to, Cyrus. Thanks very much. Had a great time.
Hey, same here. I did as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you're joining us on the radio side of our show, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. But if joining us online, we are going to lose you. So until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.